One of the first things that the Lord ever showed me years ago when I first met him was he said to never read this book just to see what it says. He said, you read this book to see what I'm saying. It's present tense. It's a big difference. This book is alive. It's not this. This book is junk. It falls apart. You got to tape it back together. It's the spirit of the book. It's the word of God. It's alive. Jesus has this ability. The Bible has this ability to say something very small, something very short. But his words are so powerful that in that little thing, he's saying this much. He's saying way more than he says. The Bible, it's the same thing. We're going to go to John, the Gospel of John, the last chapter. And this is what we're going to read today. I got to give an example, because it's in the story that we're going to read, about Jesus saying something, but saying way more than he says. You guys have all heard it, the phrase, follow me. He said it to not every apostle that he called, but a lot of them. It's recorded. I believe he said it to everyone, but it doesn't matter. He said it to a lot of them. But it's so easy to think of it as just, hey, come here, hey, follow me. When he's saying so much more than that. See, the Jewish rabbis back in the day, they would go up, when they're finding their successor, they would go up to their greatest student, and they would take off their cloak, and they would wrap it around that student. And they would say this phrase. They'd say, follow me. But in saying, follow me, they're obviously not saying, hey, come here. He's saying, follow me because I know that you can. He's saying, follow me because I see you. I know you. I know you can walk in my footsteps. I know you can do as I did. I know you can live like I live. I know that you can teach like I teach. He's saying, basically, follow me because I know that you can. I want to make 2 points today. The first one, I'm going to be preaching to the choir in a sense, but I want to talk about the power of friendship. There's lots of examples in the Bible about friends. There's David and Jonathan is probably the best example I've ever seen in the Bible of friends. They were such good friends, it was almost weird. But there's one that sticks out to me the most, and it's in the Gospel of John. And it's the friendship between John the Apostle and Peter the Apostle. And that one sticks out to me because it's not friendship in the sense of two people being friends. It's a friendship in the sense of one person being a friend to another. And I can't just say that, so I have to prove it. John the Apostle, I believe he was an incredible friend. There's a story, the Last Supper. You guys have all heard it when Jesus made the comment that somebody was going to betray him. Peter, across the way, it says that he signaled to John to ask Jesus who it was that was going to betray him. And that word's important, signal. I don't know if you guys deal with signals a lot. I work a lot with people that don't speak English. Jacob knows. Hand signals come in handy, very handy. And if you don't know the people that are giving you the signal, or if you don't know who you're giving the signal to, I've gotten into some pretty sticky situations trusting people backing me up in the truck because we don't know each other, we don't know our signals. This sticks out to me because John not only received the signal, he understood the signal, and he followed through. And he asked Jesus who it was that was going to betray him. Later, when Jesus was being tried Peter was trying to get into the courtyard. And the Bible tells us that there was a man that was inside. He happened to have an inn with the high priest. And I can't remember if he let Peter in or if he sent a servant girl. I feel like he sent a servant to go open the door. But that man was John. John let Peter into the courts that night. It's two instances of John doing something for Peter. This is the kind of the theme right now. It's a one-sided friendship. It's John being a friend to Peter. That night that day that the women came running from the tomb, they came looking for Peter. They went and found Peter to tell him that the tomb was empty. The body was gone, and it tells us that it just so happened that John happened to be there with Peter. Coincidence? I guess I don't think so. They ran to the tomb. Everybody knows that story. John got there first. He stopped. He didn't run in. He peeked, but he didn't go in. Peter came running up. I think it's widely accepted that John is younger than Peter, probably not by a lot, but at least by a few years. So to guys, respect is a huge thing, especially the idea of respecting your elders, and I just see this as John. There's a reason it's recorded. There's a reason John stopped and let Peter come and run in first to be the first one to see that Jesus had risen. It was another thing that John was doing for Peter. So now we're going to go to John, the last chapter, halfway through, verse 15 is where it starts. This is the story. Simon, do you love me? Simon, do you love me? It says it three times. So everybody's heard this. Most people. This is part of the Bible where I believe that Jesus is saying way more than he says. So to me, reading it, wanting to figure out what he's saying, I have to ask the question, why is he even asking this question? It could be the obvious reason, why is he asking, do you love me? Because he wants to know the answer. I don't believe that to be true because Peter answers him every time. He says, Lord, you know that I love you. Lord, you know that I love you. He says, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus was never afraid to correct somebody. So if Peter were lying, he would have corrected him. Jesus knows that Peter loves him. He's not asking the question because he wants to know the answer. Growing up Catholic, I learned that this was penance. This was, he did this three times, so now he's got to, he denied him, and now he's got to acknowledge him before man three times, as in like a eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But this is after Jesus died, after he put his blood on the mercy seat, after the new covenant. There's no eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth anymore. So the only way that I can see this is, has anybody in here ever asked a question to a kid, to somebody, anybody, to try to get them to see something? Not asking the question because they want the answer. I do it with the kids all the time. I think it drives them nuts. But it's better, in my opinion, if they see it on their own without spoon-feeding it to them. This is what I see. Jesus is trying to get Peter to see something. There's many reasons. He says, every time he says it, Jesus says, then feed my sheep, then feed my lambs, then tend my flock. Yeah, he's using different wordage, but he's saying the same thing every time. He's telling Peter, then you love me. then train my people, lead my people, feed my people, guide them, do what I called you to do. He called him to be an apostle. If you see, he's calling him, he's not calling him Peter. Jesus is the one that gave him the name Peter. He's calling him Simon. He's bringing him back to 3.5 years ago before he ever even did anything good for Jesus, before he did anything bad for Jesus. He's bringing him back. He's trying to tell him that my gifts and my callings are without repentance. I called you 3.5 years ago. I haven't changed my mind about you yet. This is what I see Jesus is trying to say to Peter, but Peter's not getting it. That's why he asks him 3 times. I know all of us, God has told us to do something. He tried to show us something, and we don't get it. We're not getting it right away. I don't believe it's a failure on Jesus' part. It's not a failure on God's part. We're just not getting it. Peter just not getting it. And we can tell because Jesus changes how he's talking here if we keep reading. That's always good to keep reading. But we also got to see, we'll just read this. He said to him the 3rd time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him a 3rd time. It doesn't say that he asked him a 3rd question. It says he asked him a 3rd time. The same thing. I understand there's different words for love here. If we go back to the Greek, I'm not knocking that at all. But he's still saying the same thing 3 times. Peter was grieved. Peter was there when Jesus said, if you deny me before man, I'll deny you before my Father. He was there. He didn't only do it once. He did it twice. He did it 3 times. He didn't only do it before man. He did it right in front of Jesus. The Bible tells us after the rooster crowed, Jesus turned and looked at him. So in Peter's mind, or in his heart, I truly believe he's grieved because he thinks that Jesus is actually questioning his love for him. Does that make sense? But it's not. It couldn't be farther from the truth. It's the total opposite. But he's, at this point, Peter is still very self-focused, unlike John. John was focused on his friend. Peter was focused on himself. This, I believe, is a changing moment in Peter. Well, we're just going to read it. So Jesus said to him a 3rd time, feed my sheep. Most assuredly I say to you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself, you walked where you wanted to walk. But when you are old, you'll stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not wish to go. So this he spoke to Peter, signifying to Peter what kind of a death he was going to die. So I see this, I see Jesus saying to Peter, well, first of all, I think this is probably a moment where Peter kind of actually thinks that this is a moment where he's going to be denied by Jesus. Almost like he sees it coming. Because Jesus is questioning his love for him. He knows what he did. He's not stupid. He's probably expecting to be denied right now. I believe, and the Bible doesn't say it, I just believe that if there was no John, if Peter didn't have a friend to get him to this point, that Peter would have suffered the same fate that Judas suffered after what he did. I see this as Jesus realizing Peter's not getting it. So he changes the way he's talking and he just automatically, he just spoons feed it to him. He just tells him. He says, Peter, when you are old, telling him right then and there that you're not going to die. I'm not done with you now. I'm not done with you yet. You're still going to live. When you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and take you where you do not wish to go. He said these things signifying to him. If he signified to him what kind of a death he was going to die, I think it was probably something like this. We all know from hindsight what kind of a death Peter got to die. He was martyred. He died on a cross. I see Jesus telling Peter right here that I'm not done with you. But these people, they're going to come and they're going to do to you the exact same thing that they did to me. Because they're going to see in you the exact same thing that they saw in me. He's telling Peter right here, despite anything that happened, that he still sees him as he saw him 3.5 years ago. That he's not taking anything back. He's telling Peter that you are going to live, and you're going to live in such a way that you're going to glorify me with your entire life. And Peter gets it, just like that, right here. If you keep reading, Peter's just told he's going to die a nasty death on a cross, and it's as if he didn't even hear it. It says, Peter, turning around, saw who? Saw the disciple that Jesus loved standing right there. Saw his friend. And the only thing that he could think was, Lord, what about him? I think this is the moment where Peter actually experienced the love, the grace, the mercy, the compassion, the kindness, the goodness of Jesus, like actually experienced it. Not that he hadn't before, but I believe this was a next level. This was true forgiveness. I said that I believe without John that Peter would have suffered the same fate as Judas. I believe that. I don't know, I can't prove it. But I believe that. I believe if there was no John, there would be no Peter. I don't believe Peter would have made it. John was the friend that Peter needed, that was there all the time to get Peter to that exact moment in time where Jesus was going to meet with him. I believe if there was no John, there would be no Peter. I believe if there was no Peter, there was no John. There would have been only one third of the people that received Paul as an apostle. Peter, James, and John received Paul, gave him the right hand of fellowship to preach his gospel. If we wouldn't have Paul, Paul would have lived, obviously, but he wouldn't have, his teachings may not have been accepted. We wouldn't have had two-thirds of the New Testament that we have today. We wouldn't have had a majority of this book that has changed the course of history. There's never been a book or anything that's made this big of a difference in the world. No book that's done that. I say this simply, I know, talking about friendship and preaching to the choir, obviously, the church, everybody in here. I say this because I believe that with the kingdom, when it comes to the kingdom, things are backwards when we're looking through the flesh. I want to try to find this real quick. Okay. With the kingdom, the first are last, and the last are first. It sounds backwards. If you humble yourself, you will be exalted. If you exalt yourself, you will be humbled. It seems backwards. With the kingdom, the weak are strong. The strong are overcome by the weak. That's backwards. With the kingdom, the deaf can hear, the blind can see, the mute can sing, the lame can dance. It's all backwards. Seems backwards. I believe when it comes to the kingdom that the small things are the big things. There's something about John that sticks out to me. It actually drives me nuts. There's nothing in here recorded, and Kelly talked about this on Wednesday. There's nothing in here recorded that John did that was a huge exploit for God. There's never anything that he did. There's no incredible healings. There's no miraculous anything that John did that's recorded. Other apostles, it's recorded. John, you can't find anything that he did. But he was a friend. He did something so seemingly insignificant. But in my eyes, it's probably one of the most powerful things you can do. He was there for a friend. So I guess those are the two points I guess I really wanted to make, is the power of friendship, the power of being a friend. So when you guys go somewhere new, don't be so concerned about finding a friend. I would be more concerned about being that friend. Promise you, friends will come. But I honestly do believe that one person doing something as insignificant as just being a friend to somebody could have a bigger impact on the world, a bigger impact on history, I see it in here, than a dozen Billy Grahams can. I believe that. So I want to encourage you guys. Like I said, I'm preaching to the choir, and I know it. There's people in here that have done little things for me that have impacted me in ways that they'll never know because I'm never going to tell them. But I want to encourage you guys to be that friend. I want to encourage you to persist in the little things. The things that you do every day that nobody sees. Those are the things that are important to the kingdom. I honestly believe that. So we're going to play a song that John actually played a while back. It's not the song that's great. It's not the music that's great. It's the spirit behind the song. It's the truth in the song. So I want you guys to take a moment while we're playing this song and just sit and just think of all those little things. We got a good example of a friend in here, of John, but there's a much better example of one. I think you know where I'd be going with that. Jesus. So I want, when we play the song, I just want you to think about all the times that he's been there where you haven't felt like he was there. But you know that he was there because you believe him, you believe his word. Just think of all those times and just thank him. Don't ask for anything. Just thank him.